Yo, what's up, guys? JB here. Today is Saturday, and we are recording a new roundtable discussion podcast. Each time we do this, we take questions from you guys directly in the forums, and we answer as many as possible with different artists or artists. In tonight's podcast, we have Dan White. Dan, are you on the line right now?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Lovely, lovely. So we are... We wanted to talk about a few things tonight on this podcast. There's so much to talk about. Dan, for those of you listening out there, has a very diverse history in magic, working as a performer. You've done large gigs before. You've done small gigs before. You've consulted on specials. And now, you know, this is a television special of your own. Dan's going to be featured in a show called The Supernaturalist, which is being shown on the Discovery Channel on June 29th at 10 p.m.
Correct.
And so it's very exciting. So we want to talk about what this special is, how the whole thing came about, what people can expect from it, and all of that jazz. So I'm going to get right to the questions because I know you have very limited time tonight. I thought this was a good first question. It's by Aaron Williams. Post number is 3. And he's basically saying, how did this whole Discovery Channel special come about? So what was the process like? When did you start filming this? You know, what can you tell us from behind the scenes?
Well, basically it started out... when I started talking a lot with Vijay Bueno, we had worked on a bunch of projects together, and we had sort of jammed out on a few ideas of what we'd like to see in magic. And we came up with this basic idea of sort of examining magic history and sort of where it came from and the roots and the origins and the myths and the archetypes that are involved with magic. And because of those discussions, we pretty much tried to figure out how we could turn that into something that people could watch, something that people could see. And we had ideas for stage shows and close-up shows, and we eventually realized that the best medium for those ideas would probably be a TV show. So came up with the concept and put it down on paper, worked on it for a while, probably about a year. We worked on just developing the idea, you know, to its completeness. And then from there, we shot some different test shoots and went to some cool places in the United States, like Miami, and did some really cool things with like different voodoo priestesses and things like that. And from there, we then took it to a bunch of different networks and tried to make something from that. Excuse me, I'm underneath the helicopter right now. I apologize about that noise. But from those initial, you know, test shots that we did, we put together a whole nice package and pitched it to all the different networks, and it really stemmed from that.
How did you select the different locations that you shot in? I know you shot a lot in the mountains of Nepal, Dominican Republic, all these exotic locations. How did you choose those locations?
Well, originally, we first shot in the Dominican Republic, and we got a really good vibe from that. And then we tried to figure out, because obviously, we're just doing this on our own time and our own budget, where we could go to do it in the United States. And we figured that Miami probably has the most diverse area of people, and it was the most sort of mystical things going on there. So that's how we decided that. Eventually, when the TV show came to fruition, we had a bunch of different options all over the Orient and South America and things like that. But we eventually chose on Nepal. It was actually originally going to be India, but there were some complications with their government. They didn't really want to come across as a land of mysticism. I guess they're sort of moving into the industrial age, and they didn't want to look like they were stuck in the past. So we had a little bit of difficulty with India, and we decided to choose Nepal instead. And it actually, you know, really worked out in our favor, because Nepal is a perfect place because it's got a good mix of Hinduism and Buddhism, and it's a sort of combination of Indian culture and more of a Tibetan Chinese culture going on. So it's a really good mix, and it's a hotbed for a lot of different religions and ideas.
Talking about more about the process behind this show, someone was asking, his name is Gio, post number is 5. He's saying, how did you pick the consultants for this show? You're friends with almost everyone who's anyone in magic. So how did you choose the few people that were going over to Nepal with you? How did you choose these people that were assisting with the show?
Well, because the show sort of came about very quickly, I didn't have a lot of time to really pick through everybody, and because of, you know, budget issues and stuff like that, I really had to narrow down quickly to who was available and who were my friends. And she is correct. I mean, I've got a lot of different friends that I would have loved to have worked with on the project. But when it came down to it, it was really just about who I could feel I would really work well with, and who would be perfect for the situation. And we ended up, there was a bunch of different consultants, but the people that actually traveled with me were Seth Robner and Michael Amar. And it turned out to be great. I mean, Michael is somebody who I've looked up to for my entire life, and just to be able to work with him was a great honor. And Seth is great at magic. Not very many people really know about him yet, but he's got a lot of cool things that he's working on, and he was a fantastic help. You know, besides that, I obviously, like I said before, BJ continued to be just a great source of inspiration and really great person to work with. But, if it was up to me, I would have liked to have had every single one of my friends work on this whole thing. But, you know, just with time issues and different things like that, it didn't work out that way. But it's always an interesting process trying to figure out who's going to be on the team.
There's a question here by Card Magician 12, post number 7. He says, out of all the places you visited, was there one country that reacted better to performances than other countries have? So have you been to a specific location, or maybe Nepal, where they reacted differently, or how did you find that resulted based on your experience filming the show?
That's a great question, because it's each culture, and that's sort of what I really wanted to find out, is how different cultures and how different people would react to the same magic. And I didn't think there'd be that much of a big difference, but in Nepal, there really was. I mean, everywhere I go, magic is definitely one of those things that it transcends languages. I think most people know that. But Nepal was very interesting, because when I would do magic, they would swarm me. And it's not just like, just gathering a large crowd. It would be to the point where there'd be a huge crowd formed, and I couldn't walk 6 or 7 feet not doing anything, not doing magic, just, having a bottle of water or going to the bathroom. I'd constantly be surrounded by a donut of people everywhere I went. And I didn't even have a chance to get set up for another trick or go somewhere else and try to prepare for something, because there would literally be people all around. At one point, I had to do like body double switches around corners and hide behind, baskets and things like that. I mean, it was like out of Aladdin, the opening season of Aladdin, where it's just like, I'm really...
You look like Aladdin.
No, it got to be that bad, and there was no sense of boundary. And I think in the United States, people respect that. So, there's a line, okay, you're done performing, and they keep going, and I keep going, and it's over, next group sort of thing. But there, for some reason, people would follow me around the whole day. Like, literally, from the first moment we started shooting at 8 a.m. until 8 p.m, the same people would be still there. It was definitely really, really, really odd for me. But at the same time, it was kind of nice too, because these people really appreciated something that I'd never seen before. And their reactions and just how transfixed they were. It was definitely more of a transfixed reaction. It was really nice. And the people all were incredibly sweet.
This is a really interesting question from Drew Dickelman. His post number is 11. He's saying, when you did magic for these local people and these interesting cultures in Nepal in particular, did they understand that, what you were performing was an illusion? Or did they believe you physically had supernatural powers?
It varied. Each person is a different sort of case. I think some people definitely thought that this stuff might be real, and then others didn't. I didn't try to present it as anything that was real. It was always presented as, we're making a TV show about magic and illusion, and we never made any claims of anything different. So I don't think that people walked away, nor did I try to make people walk away that I was some sort of mystical priest or anything like that. But I think some people might have assumed that, and that's, something you can't really control. It's one of those weird things where even if you tell somebody that it's not real, they're still not going to believe you, and vice versa. So it was definitely a learning experience to see what people would take away from it.
Is a good question here from Feel It. He's in Denmark. His post number is 19.
Hello, Felix.
This goes a little bit farther back. You've worked on a lot of TV shows in the past, with not only with David Blaine, but you know, consulting on many things. Was making your own show way different? Was making a television special of your own a lifelong dream of yours? Was it something you got excited about doing and always wanted to do, or how did that dream and ambition come about?
Yeah, it's definitely something I've always wanted to do, but I didn't want to do it just to do a TV show. It wasn't like, oh, I just want to have a TV show. It wasn't that. It was more about this idea, and I really wanted to express this idea. And I wouldn't want to ever do a TV show or do anything unless it was something that I really thought was really interesting and really great, and I could really fall in love with. And this idea, I definitely fell in love with at the beginning. It changed quite a bit from the original concept. But that's what really pushed me ahead. That's what really made me want to do it. It was because of the concept. But, you know, working with David and doing a lot of other things involved in television, it's definitely a different experience when sort of all the spotlight's on you and all the weight's on your shoulders. It's a lot of work. And honestly, I would have loved to have more time. We only really had a month to get ready to do the show, and then only a couple of weeks to actually shoot it. So that time crunch really put even more pressure on the whole situation. But it's definitely, I definitely respect everybody or anybody who's ever done a special like these, because it is just a mountain of work. But completely rewarding. Definitely worth it, and you know, really great to see sort of the fruits of your labor pay off.
Interesting. Talking about the experience of going over there, we talked a little bit in the news post that we made earlier this week about this semi-dangerous flight that you took, and I remember listening to Michael talk about this as well, landing in Nepal. Can you give us the brief summary of what that was like and what happened?
Yeah, sure. So it's kind of crazy. Basically, after we landed in Kathmandu, which is the capital city of Nepal, and we were shooting another scene all the way up in the mountains, sort of at the base of Mount Everest, and the elevation's, you know, really high, and it's all the way up in the mountains. And because it's so high in the mountains, they only have enough room for really small airstrips, air landing strips. And in this one city, it's actually considered the most dangerous airport in the world because of the fact that the landing strip is so small and it's on an angle. It's not flat. So when you land, it's almost like it is like you're going up a hill. You land and then you go straight up a hill. And I was, you know, definitely nervous. I knew that I was going into that, and I'd heard reports of crashes. Apparently, there's one or two crashes per year, so the odds aren't very good already. And when I got on the flight, you know, this airplane was extremely small. I was sitting right next to the flight attendant, and as the plane was taking off, she started saying all these prayers very loudly. And that got
that's reassuring.
Because,
yeah.
You know, the flight attendant who flies this plane literally, you know, twice a day was not so confident in the flight itself. And, you know, you can see in the cockpit, and there's no computers going on or anything like that. I think the plane was from the 60s. All the doors were rattling and all the paint was chipping. It was definitely, I was very nervous. But the real thing that really, you know, sort of made me feel terrible, but at the same time very lucky, is that the same flight, the flight that I took out there, when it was flying back, crashed in the same mountain range. And the exact same plane, the whole crew, including the flight attendant I was sitting next to, they all passed away. So, yeah, I narrowly missed that, and I appreciate whatever spirit or God was watching me over in that moment.
It was me.
It was JB.
It was me. I called ahead. No, that's terrifying. That's absolutely terrifying. So do you have any desire to go back to that location, or is that flight experience enough for you of a trip to...
Well, I didn't know that the plane had crashed on the way back when I got on the plane to leave that city. So had I known that, I don't know if I would have been able to get on that plane. It's pretty rough. actually another experience when I was over there. I don't know if I told you this. I told you about me getting practically almost getting rabies.
I remember you talking to me when you got back saying that you had to get a rabies shot, right?
Yeah, no, literally on the first shot of the whole experience, like they just fired up the cameras, all the crews there ready to go. Day one, shoot one, minute one. A monkey bites me on my finger. A wild monkey. Great. You know, first day, this is great luck. So the monkey bites my finger, and the crew's like, all right, just keep going. I'm like, oh, maybe I should stop for a second. So we did a few other shots. I cleaned the wound, and I had to go to the Nepalese doctors and get a whole treatment for rabies, which the Nepalese hospitals are quite a bit different than the American ones. But everything got taken care of. But it's just funny how literally the first moment of the thing was already a big issue. But I'm safe. I'm all clean. I do not have rabies.
That we know about, at least.
That we know about. I had to have, I believe it was 7 shots in total.
Wow, that's elaborate.
Over the course of 2 months.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
There's a good question here. I know we only have a few more moments, so I'll get through as many of these as we can, kind of rapid fire.
Sure.
Happy Knife, post number 44, Toronto, Canada. His question is a boot. Get it? Because I said a boot, because he's in Canada. Anyway. he says, do you believe in real magic? Essentially, I think it's the gist of his question. What's your prediction on whether real magic exists? So seeing the things that you've seen over this special, I know you've seen some weird stuff. You've seen people, chicken heads, you've seen crazy, you know, things in remote cultures that are way different from what we're used to in the United States. Did you find anything that made you question if there are real, you know, or even elements of real magic and mysticism present in the world?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been sort of, I guess, a skeptic who's waiting to believe and willing to believe. For me, if I see something that I can't explain or something that honestly convinces me that supernatural or real magic could exist, I'll definitely, you know, consider it. I don't have my mind closed off. I haven't seen anything yet, and I don't know if I ever will, but just I think being open to the possibility is a good way to look at things. I know also that I think it's important to really figure out what your definition of real magic is. Just seeing these beautiful places and seeing these beautiful people and what they do and their elaborate ceremonies and their belief systems, you know, I don't know if I can actually say that it's not real magic because of just, you know, how it's interpreted and how it's interpreted by people. You know, if someone believes in something truly and their faith, you know, convinces them that something is magic as they define it, then, you know, more power to them. I'm not going to say that it isn't. And that's one thing through the whole show that I don't want to be, is I don't want to say this isn't real magic. This is real magic. This isn't real magic. It's sort of how people interpret it. You know, I think the role of a magician always is really to point out to regular people that there's things that they don't know about, to point out, like, to give people the feeling of wonder. And I think that's what real magic is, really. So, you know, we can't explain everything. So just giving somebody the reminder that everything isn't as always as it seems, I think is the true goal of any magician.
And you think that performing like you were in these cultures, and even just by sake of being there, I think, you know, you're this outsider that's coming there, and in the middle of their day, in the middle of their market, in their hometown, this guy comes there and shows them incredible things. I think those people are probably still talking about what they saw that day today.
I hope so.
That's at least the goal. We'll have like one final question here. I think this is something that was in the mind of everyone. Multiple people asked this. A lot of people, whether they're a young magician, they're an older magician, they perform professionally, or they're just a hobbyist, they have large goals with magic. And I remember when I was younger, doing a television special was like, you know, the ultimate dream.
Right.
Having my own special. You grew up watching people like David Copperfield and David Blaine. And to have that opportunity is very rare. There's a lot of questions that were submitted tonight with people asking how can they one day you know, follow in those footsteps. What advice would you give someone if they're just starting in magic, if they have a little bit of experience in magic? What can they do to work towards that goal of actually having a network television special? If that's the end goal they want to work towards and having obviously a career beyond that, what advice would you give those people?
It's a great question, and it's definitely something that there's no one clear-cut answer for. I mean, I'm sure everybody goes through different steps. The one thing that I would definitely recommend is always try to be open to every situation and opportunity that comes around and to take small steps. I couldn't have gotten anywhere without the things that had happened that preceded it. So each step along the way was another step towards this goal. You're not going to be sitting at home on your computer and then the next day the network's calling you up to do a TV show. That's never going to happen. You have to, you know, go from sitting at home to small-scale performing, to performing for bigger audiences, to working with other people who have experience in the television media, and you know, taking it from there. Each step along the way, even if it seems like something that you don't think would ever take you anything to anywhere further, it's always a good experience. Just meeting people, learning from other people, you know, I think those small steps really, really make the biggest difference. And you have to be willing to work, you know, in each situation to get you further.
I love that. I mean, your friend and mine, Steve Cohen, he always has people ask him how he got this amazing gig at the Waldorf Astoria in New York. And people just assume that one day he got a call and then they said, "Hi, I'm Cindy calling from the Waldorf Astoria. And we're looking for a magician to work here for the next 10 years in an amazing presidential suite." When, and, you know, in reality, it's the exact opposite. You know, Steve Cohen working right. for years at the National Arts Club and doing all these other events. And then, but all of those things led up to where he is now. And he's, you know, about to be performing in Carnegie Hall in a few months. Like you said, everything that you've done previously, all of the shows you've consulted on, all of the live events you've done and private
right.
events.
Right, and it also depends on personal relationships. It's very important to be able to meet people and learn from them and work with them and establish connections, and those things really pay off in the long run. And, you know, I think, you know, you want to start off with a goal. Like, it's great to have your dream goal, the thing that you want to achieve, but you have to be willing to take the small steps necessary to get there. It's not just going to drop in your lap. You have to go small, climb the ladder. It's just every step you take is another step forward.
And it's, you know, it's an interesting journey too, because, you know, you growing up and performing for, you know, small close-up events and private parties and all these little things added up to a cumulative experience that you were then able to translate into this show. So it's not all too
right.
different, you performing for some nice cocktail event in New York City than performing for these people in a village in Nepal. It's the same performance instincts that you built and you created that were obviously translated into something really big. So
right, and the thing is, it's also, I mean, you have to be willing to accept failure and get up from them. This isn't the first time I've tried to have a television show. This is actually the second one that I've worked on. The first one fell flat, you know, nothing ever happened to it, and I worked just as hard on that one, and nothing ever happened from it. But I, you know, got back up and tried it again. I waited, I think, you know, a couple of years in between, and, you know, probably just to digest the fact that it failed. But, you know, each time you just got to keep going for it, you know, so you got to, and that's another thing is, like, the first time is never going to be the end. You know, it's always a learning experience through good and bad.
It's very inspiring. It's very inspiring. So I've said it privately, but I'll say it on the record. Congratulations on the big special. It's a monumental thing.
Well, I want to thank you very much, because without your help, this wouldn't have happened either. So I really appreciate it.
It's a very big deal. I mean, not many people can say they have their own Discovery Channel special. It's something that, you know, I personally, as a magician, was growing up watching magicians have Discovery Channel specials and Fox Family specials and NBC specials and ABC specials. And there's only, you know, you count those people on two hands. So it's a very big thing. I'm really excited about it. So for everyone listening here, be sure to mark in your calendar June 29th, which is the show date, airs at 10 p.m. And for the love of God, tell everyone you know to watch it, DVR it, spread the word.
So I can bring you some more.
Exactly. So that there will be a Supernaturalist 2 But thank you, Dan, for answering all the questions tonight. Thank you guys in the forums for asking all these great questions.
Yeah, I really appreciate all your questions. And, you know, from the beginning, I wanted this to be a community thing. So the more it goes on, hopefully I'll try to get as many people involved as possible.
It's very exciting. So thank you to Dan. Thank you guys for listening. And we will catch you next week.